skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 49 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
And our main review on this episode is Central Intelligence, starring The Rock and Kevin Hart. Now, eagle-eyed listeners, or eagle-eared listeners, is that a term?
Eagle-eared listeners
will know that that is not the film we said we were going to review. We did say we were going to review Now You See Me 2, but we've changed our mind because it's our show and we can do what we want.
And it's our prerogative.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've not seen the first and couldn't be bothered to watch two films in a week.
That was most of the reason why we changed. And also it came out on a Monday, which is an odd day for a film to come out. Where Central Intelligence came out on a Friday, like a film should.
And has The Rock.
And has The Rock in, so there you go, win-win.
And definitely has more heart.
And a big Johnson. that's the tagline for the film, isn't it? Everyone needs a little heart and a big Johnson, which is one of the cleverest taglines I've ever seen. Pure island silly, but really, really, really well thought out. Anyway, rewatch. It was my pick this time. We're going to rewatch Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, which I cannot wait to talk about with you guys. Adam, what year are we skipping back in time to?
1981, it's coming to the end.
Indeed we are. And Mark, what is our topic this week?
Top three psychics in movies.
I think we're going to have some debate between us and maybe with some of the listeners about what constitutes a sidekick. You know what I mean?
Stay tuned for that.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a little bit of argument about that. We got the final round of Lost the Plot coming up and various other things. Before we get going though, Mark... A little birdie tells me, and by a little birdie I mean our own Twitter feed, tells me that you went to the UK premiere of the new Kevin Smith movie, Yoga Hosers.
I certainly did.
Any good?
I will say it now. It was very, very good fun. And I mean it.
So good.
Yeah,
good
it was.
Fun.
Good it was
fun.
Good.
Not a good movie.
No, it was good.
But good fun.
I went there with very low expectations after Tusk.
Yeah.
And I'll gladly say it now. I really bloody enjoyed it. And Kevin Smith was fantastic all night and did. I went there at 7 o'clock at night and I didn't leave till 4 in the morning.
Were you just stalking?
So I watched him shower. I watched him, no. He did a Q&A and then I went for the second screening to watch it again and another Q&A.
So you watched it twice?
Yes, in one night.
Jesus Christ.
Yes, I watched it twice.
So are you at that point where you're kind of forcing yourself to believe it's good?
No, I'm going to try and beat your Dark Knight record of 10. So I'm going to another 9 to go.
I think, you know, it may very well be good. We'll be the judge when we get to see it. I doubt it, though. And I think there was a kind of a Stockholm syndrome involved in this. It's because you were watching it in the same room as Kevin Smith. You've sort of felt that you have to like it.
No.
I think if you'd went to see it with us at the local cinema, you would have been going, this is shit, this is just as bad as Tusk. But again, I haven't seen it, so I can't know for sure.
Well, all will be revealed in a few weeks when I put out a review for it. So stay tuned for that.
Look forward to that. Let's get started.
Well, guys, I set the topic last week, top three psychics in movies. Now, I think we mentioned it on the last episode. It's just about a case of trying to get 100 down to 3.
Mm-hmm.
I found it very challenging. I don't know about you two. There's so many out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is quite challenging.
Literally hundreds. I've whittled mine down to 3. I'm quite proud. I hope there's not too much crossover.
Ben kind of alluded to it in the intro, though. It's like it's all about what you defined psychic as, as to how many there were.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
But again, like everything, like we always say, if you can justify your pick, it's good enough.
Adam, kick things off for me.
Ed from Shaun of the Dead.
Nice.
Mainly because of the dynamic between him and Shaun, I think. I think they've got that friendship we've all got or had with someone.
Yeah.
Like, if we could, we'd sit on the couch watching TV, playing video games with them all day, drinking, doing whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We'd all do it. I think that's one of the reasons I love him so much. The dynamic between him and Shaun, his own sort of dialogue as well. He is that mate. We've all got a friend we introduce to other friends and say, he's a bit of a character. Which basically means he's a twat.
Yeah. He's the one that you kind of, you do a semi-apology for him before you introduce him to your friends. Like, he's all right, really. You just have to get to know him.
My brother John.
Brutal.
But it's true. We're all going to admit it. We're all going to admit it's true, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't mean it, John. I'm sorry.
I was really concerned when
he's
you started.
He's not listening.
I was really concerned when you started this off saying we've all got a friend that we want. And I was thinking, are we going to go to Adam's house and he's got a mate tied up in his shed? You know what I mean?
No, I wouldn't choose him.
No.
No, but that's Ed. That is Ed from Shaun of the Dead. Yes. He's that relatable character. And I just love him for it. So he had to make my list.
It's a great choice.
Ben.
Oh, I don't know what order to do my name. All of mine are so different, I've just realised. I'm going to go with a fun one to begin with. I've gone with Brick Tamland from Anchorman, Steve Carell.
Yep.
He is. Obviously, there's many...
No need to say more.
That's it. I've done it. There are many members to the news team, of course, but he, to me, is the sidekick of the team. He's like the little fool that follows them around. Just has some of the best, craziest lines, just non-sequiturs. Like, I hate a huge red candle and things like that.
Where did you get your clothes from? The toilet store?
I'm not allowing any more than one quote. This
is it, because
it's 20 minutes.
We're going to fall into that hole of just saying the whole film again, aren't we? But he is a great backup, especially in the fight scene. You know, who doesn't need a friend who wields a trident as well as he does? Everyone needs that kind of friend.
Absolutely brilliant. Fantastic choice.
I'm going to leave things off with the red rope licorice eating Garth Elgar.
Yeah.
Nice.
Drummer extraordinaire. Just the... coolest guy ever. Like the Foxy Lady dance scene, I always go straight back to the donut man he makes. But he is Wayne's best friend and he is the perfect psychic because he would take a bullet. Literally. Yeah. He is hardcore. He kind of sees all of Wayne's weaknesses as well. He'll see the women that are trying to overpower him. He sees the bad manager that's trying to get involved with Cassandra, and he's there. He's the ultimate psychic. He's the
wingman.
He is the wingman, yes, he certainly is.
So but is he all three of your choices?
I love the guy, and I think, you know, sequels don't always work, but Wayne's World 2, they were perfect, and I'm glad we never got another film.
I think it's because of how vastly different Wayne's World 2 actually was to Wayne's World. In like story, it wasn't just like a rehashed storyline, and it actually added some great development to Garth's character as well. Like, he has that kind of relationship with the woman who wants him to kill her husband and stuff. And it's just absolutely brilliant.
Schwing.
That scene when they're in the bar and he's just sort of telling that story, and every time a girl was wagging, schwing, schwing, schwing.
It's an unbelievable film and I couldn't leave him out.
Definitely. Good choice. So my number two then, Groot.
Oh.
I am Groot.
Ever since we watched Guardians of the Galaxy, the one dynamic that I love the most is Rocket and Groot.
Yeah.
And with Groot as that kind of sidekick to Rocket, I absolutely love everything he does in that film. Mm-hmm. The fact that all he says is I am Groot / we are Groot.
Spoilers.
Sorry.
Ruin the big emotional moment at the end of the film.
And we get all of his dialogue essentially translated through Rocket.
Yeah.
It just goes to show how great their relationship is. I think there's some moments where Rocket's going, kind of arguing with Groot. But all we're hearing is, I am Groot. And his facial expressions, his actions are kind of what tells his character. There's a fantastic bit when they're going to break out the prison and Rocket's revealing his plan. Mm-hmm. And he goes, we have to get that battery there. And Groot just stops paying attention and goes to get the battery.
Yeah.
And then Rocket's telling the story about how we need to get that last because that's going to set the alarms off. And then Groot just points towards it, rips it off and goes, there you go.
I was watching the film again the other day and I loved the bit where he uses one of his extendable arms and you know, goes through loads of bad guys and he's whacking them around and smashing them into the roof and to the walls. And then he just turns around to the other good guys and just smirks at them. I love the way the little smile on his face.
And I was doing like a bit of research into this. I was kind of thinking, who do I want? And then I just thought, you know what? Groot.
Mm.
He's a great sidekick.
Yeah, big time.
I'm trying to think if I'd count him as a sidekick or Rocket Raccoon. They both could be
Rocket's
pretty...
Rocket's the one that talks, he's the one that does more.
Yeah. They'd be both acceptable.
I think you could argue that Rocket is Star-Lord's sidekick,
but
Groot is Rocket's sidekick.
I like his muscle.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to stick with the theme then. I'm going to stick with comic books. I've gone for Chloe Grace Moretz as Hit Girl in Kick-Ass.
Superb.
She is so good in that film. I have a great love for children who curse. I love foul-mouthed kids in films. I don't generally like kids in films, as you know, but when they're foul-mouthed, it always entertains me. Like a film that we talked about briefly on a few episodes ago was Role Models, and I watched that this past weekend. You remember, like, the kid in that who just Fs and Jeffs? And I love that. It makes me laugh. And some of the stuff that comes out of Chloe Moretz's mouth on this film is nasty.
Vulgar.
I'm sure she uses the C word more than once as well. And so just that coming out at the time, I think she was about 13, maybe even younger. And she was brilliant with that. And the action sequences as well. She was an absolute badass. She was more magnetic, more interesting a character than the character of Kick-Ass. I vastly preferred her.
Yeah. I kind of want a spin-off from her.
My number one.
You got it as well? Yeah. Nice. Tell us why.
Hit Girl is just absolutely phenomenal in what she does. In that film, when she slaughters the gang members, it's one of the most brutal scenes I've ever seen in the film, and it's done by a child. It's absolutely just amazing. The dynamic she has as well with Big Daddy,
yes, Nicolas Cage,
is unbelievable. When he just shoots her, in like one of the opening times, we really get to see them both.
Doesn't he go? He shoots and goes, "Surprise, baby doll."
I love everything about it, and the bit where she's like. She dresses as a lost schoolgirl and she goes into like the reception, just starts literally shooting people.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
She's a badass. Absolutely badass.
Just, oh, yeah, fantastic.
I didn't like the sequel very much and I didn't like her arc in the sequel.
I didn't either.
I didn't like that at all. I thought that was a waste of the character.
It's such a bad sequel. It's weird. I watched it on Film 4 this weekend. Mm. It was on telly and I just sat there and I thought, oh, you know, it's just on. You think, I'll just watch it. And I thought, perhaps it's better than I remember. It isn't. It feels like a different film. And I know Jim Carrey asked for a lot of his parts to be cut away. What a waste in that film. Ridiculous.
The whole story just isn't good.
No,
it's not that great.
Different director as well, and
I mean, it's true of the comics. I think there have been three runs of the comics now, and they've got progressively worse. And that's, you know, the second comic wasn't as good as the first. Yeah. That's why the film isn't as good as the first. But it is a shame. I quite like Jim Carrey in it, to be honest. I thought he was one of the redeeming features.
Kennel, Stars and Stripes.
Yeah, and I don't think he had anything of him cut from the film. He just didn't promote it.
Right, okay.
He just didn't go out and do the interviews and the junkets and so on. But it's not a terrible film. It's just not as good as the first.
No,
shame. My next choice, I think one that you'll really definitely agree with, Ben, Silent Bob.
we knew it was going to happen.
In honour of Silent Bob, can I choose to remain silent for the rest of this segment?
I love Silent Bob. I love Jay and Silent Bob. They're great. I think I picked them as my favourite duos when we had them.
Yeah, we know
partners.
You love them, mate.
But Silent Bob, the fact that he doesn't say anything, and when he does, it's important. That one line of the film is killer. Any sort of View Askew fans, when they're watching Chase and Amy or Clerks, or when he does talk, just listen to what he says, because it's summed up perfectly in that one sentence he says.
Anyone else can see where he says, "I got nothing."
That's it. That sums up perfectly that scene.
It sums up the whole film. Pointless.
In fact, it sums up his career pretty much after that as well.
I'm not having that. I'm going to stop that there. Move on. Silent Bob. Cemented.
You've already had my number one as Hit Girl, so Ben?
I'm going to go for a very different way. I'm going with Joe Pesci as Tommy DeVito in Goodfellas.
Nice.
Okay. Now, I wouldn't... He's not necessarily Robert De Niro's sidekick in that film. He's his right-hand man. I think that's the best way of putting it.
That's the gangster way of saying it.
Yeah, but I think that falls into the same sort of category. Not only is it a brilliant character, it's so well played. One of the things I love in a character is when you feel that their attitude can turn so quickly
at any point.
It will take something so minor to set them off. And he was like one of them. He's an affable guy having a laugh and a joke with you. But then all of a sudden, he's not laughing anymore. Because what is he, a clown for your amusement? You know, it's unreal. And the thing that upsets me about this is that he effectively, not long after this, retired. You know, he did. I think Casino came after this, which is a great film. But he hasn't really done much since. He did like a couple of shit Lethal Weapon sequels. But why did he retire, man?
I don't know. I've never really looked into it.
I want him back.
Yeah.
He was always that guy that you kind of saw in every mobster film.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he disappeared, you just didn't never really thought about it.
Yeah.
Has he done anything recently?
He did a film a few years back with Helen Mirren, I think, where they played like the owners of a brothel. and I think he did it as a favour to the director or something. It was a friend of his, so he came out of retirement to do this film. But I think that's basically it, and it's a shame. Because he was a great screenwriter. And he's one of those people, you look at him and think, there's no way you're a movie star. You're 4'3". You've got a face like a bag of spanners. There's no way you're going to be a movie star. But he is. He's magnetic on
and
screen.
And that's it. It's that gravitas that he seems to have.
Perhaps he'll do like Home Alone 7.
Fingers crossed.
You never know.
Is Macaulay Culkin back for that as well?
Oh my God, imagine that.
The thing is, I can only assume that he's made a good bit of bunts and not spent it, because it's usually at this point of retirement when people pop up in crap films because they've spent all their money on gambling or whatever. But he hasn't done that. So I think he's got a good accountant or something.
He probably is. Probably just not bothered about doing films anymore. Yeah. He's like, I've got my money.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah.
In my head, I'm trying to work out what the storyline could be for Home Alone 7 if Macaulay Culkin's that old. It could be him and Corey Feldman trying to escape from Michael Jackson getting into their bedroom.
Is that a documentary?
So, my final choice. I've heard a lot about voting recently, voting to stay in, voting to stay out. There's only one vote for me. Vote for Pedro.
Nice.
Pedro Sanchez.
Yeah.
I knew one of you would have this.
I know you're not a massive fan of the film, but this guy is a legend. The fact that he just... he just exists. He just kind of follows Napoleon, but he's always, again, he's like a really good wingman.
Mm-hmm.
He helps him. He let him have the first dance with Debs at the ball. You know, that's important. You know, it's his big moment. He let Napoleon have the light. He was there the whole campaign. His cousins will help you out if you ever get in a fight. He's great to have around.
He is. I love his voice. I love the way he speaks. Like when he's talking about why he's wearing a wig.
It was really hot. My head was sweating, so I decided to shave my head.
And the fact that he got that hot, he just went in the bath and shaved his head. Not like get a fan or open a window, shave your head. Pedro Sanchez, man, he is the man. And if unfortunately, again, he didn't do much afterwards.
I saw him in something not that long ago. I can't remember what it was. It wasn't anything big. But I saw him and I was like, that's Pedro!
Did anyone from that film do anything big afterwards?
Not really. John Heder did a couple of shit comedies. That's about it.
It's a shame. That was one of them.
Yeah. No!
Do you guys want to hear what the guys on social media have come up with?
Yeah.
Damian Lewis has said Hit Girl. He's also said Doug Reamer from Basketball.
Sorry, Damian Lewis, as in the star of Homeland.
Damian Bullock is his name.
Why did you say Damian Lewis?
Did I say Damian Lewis?
I think so.
Let's do this again.
No, keep that in.
So, Hit Girl, yes. Doug Reamer from Basketball.
Uh-huh.
And how do you pronounce, is it Negan or Negan Sonic Teenage Warhead?
Negasonic.
Yes. Warhead. Which is a great choice.
From Deadpool.
Yes. Simon Lewis has said Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Short Round from Indiana Jones, which came through on social media more than anything else.
Yeah.
And Walter from Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
Boo AC has put Bolty from Super.
Super.
Yeah. Very
shut up, crime.
Again, Hit Girl, that came through loads. And Weasel from Deadpool. Matthew Fisher has put Kato from Green Hornet.
No. Now, I say this definitively because I watched Green Hornet this past weekend. I had a bit of a Seth Rogen binge. Don't ask me why. But I watched this film. Oh, by God, it's shit. I knew it was shit, but I didn't realise how shit it was.
So are you saying no, he's not allowed that
because
the film's
so
bad?
I'm saying he's not allowed it if he's referring to the Seth Rogen version of the film.
Okay. Which is wank.
Yeah.
Okay. Donkey from Shrek.
Yeah.
He's kind of cheated. He's put C-3PO and R2-D2. It's one or the other. Do they come as one?
I'd probably say C-3PO is the sidekick to R2-D2.
It's a big debate there, so I'm not prepared to have it
today.
We'll
save that for another time.
That's my topic.
The Last Take podcast has put Sam from Lord of the Rings. Boo. Look at Ben's face, just disgust.
Oh, God. Oh, I'm so glad you're here with me, Mr. Frodo. Shut up.
Doc Brown, great choice.
Yeah.
And Chewbacca, which I did think you might have, Adam. And finally, False Start podcast has put Goose from Top Gun.
Yeah.
Cameron from Ferris Bueller and Ellie from Jurassic Park.
Who's Ellie?
The female.
The female what? Dinosaur or person?
Human being. No, it's one of the dinosaurs. It's the main woman that's played by Laura Dern.
Oh, yeah.
So there you go.
Thanks for that, guys.
Brilliant.
Which one? A dinosaur? Is she the one who's clever girl?
No, that's her mum. Is it a mum? No, it's just they're not for it.
Clever girl's not a girl, it's a dinosaur. Yes. Laura Dern is not the mother of a velociraptor, to the best of my knowledge.
That's where they're going wrong.
Oh, so it's my topic for next
week.
So I wanted to choose one that would get you thinking a bit. Your top three vehicles, transports in film.
Ooh. That's sort of way out there, very different to the stuff we've done before.
Yeah, so one of the, you know, we're talking Millennium Falcon, we're talking stuff like that.
Hang on. I'm giving away my choices.
Can be anything. It can be the DeLorean, whatever you want.
Wow.
Again, ruined another one. That was definitely going to be one of Mark's.
I'm well annoyed that right now, Kevin Smith doesn't drive a car in any film.
Silent Bob's shoes.
Are we recording?
The refreshing taste of dark fruits.
Skip to the end reviews. Sponsored by Strongbow Dark Fruits.
Nice. We've been to our local View Cinema to see Central Intelligence, the new action comedy starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Kevin Hart. Hart plays an accountant who was the most likely to succeed student at his high school, but his life hasn't turned out like he thought it would. Johnson plays the fat loser at his school, who then turns out to be a CIA agent and comes into Kevin Hart's life because he needs his help with some forensic accountancy. Everyone knows all the big crimes get solved by forensic accountancy. And that's what happens. And it's just a fun film from then on. Yeah?
Yeah, you've not done as well as previous weeks.
All right.
You had a really good standard.
What would you give me out of 10?
6. Oh. You've really hit the nail on the head with a forensic accountant. I think that's very key to this film.
For me, it's the only thing that I enjoy more than trade negotiations. It's forensic accounting. It's accounting, isn't it? Not accounting. I've been saying it wrong all this time, but never mind. Let's get going. Mark, instant thoughts.
I won't lie, when we went to the cinema, I know it was a very last minute choice for us all to go, let's change the film. But when we got to the cinema, I was not really looking forward to it. I was just like, this is going to be stupid.
Yeah.
But I was pleasantly surprised and I enjoyed it for what it was. I actually came away thinking, that was good fun.
Mm-hmm. Adam?
Pretty much the same, really. Expectations were quite low, but overall, it was like, there was nothing offensive about it.
That's all you can ask for.
Yeah, it was good fun.
Yes, you've both used the word fun, and I would agree with you. I think the film was fun without being particularly funny. I don't recall laughing out loud at any point.
No.
I had a smile on my face, maybe the odd little chuckle. It was a fun film. It wasn't particularly long, hour and three quarters. But I enjoyed it for what it was. And the reason why I think I enjoyed it so much was because the chemistry between Dwayne Johnson and Kevin Hart was off the charts. They were a great comic duo. The material could have been better, but that's not their fault. They didn't write it. They did the best with what they had, and I really enjoyed those two.
There's a particular bit where, like, he's slapping him. And he's like pretending to be his therapist.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, this must have been so much fun on set.
And you can see it because it's in the outtakes at the end of the film where you see him cracking up. Because it's a scene, it was arguably the funniest scene in the film, I think. It's where The Rock pretends to be a marriage counsellor. Yeah. So Kevin Hart and his wife are going to this counsellor. She doesn't realise that it's not the real counsellor. And he's doing all sorts of weird shit, like holding him like a baby, because Rock is about 9 foot taller than Kevin Hart. And it was a very funny scene, actually. I think that was probably one of the few scenes where I laughed.
I think you nailed it on the head there with the chemistry. That word itself is what worked so well.
Yeah.
Those two, it's their first ever film together.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that. I thought these guys have probably done lots of stuff. You just assume.
Yeah.
But they haven't. And I've seen them on press tours doing some videos and like mockery of each other at the moment on YouTube and stuff. Those two are like best mates right now.
Yeah.
And
you can tell.
I want to see more.
Well, they're both going to be in the remake of Jumanji.
Oh great.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that sounded really good. They're both going to be in Jumanji.
Also starring Jack Black. Does that make it any better for you?
Nope.
Is Robin Williams going to make a cameo?
Definitely not.
The voiceover. From back in the day.
Just take the
ghost of him.
Just take some of the voice from the first film and add it in.
It's been done before. Films have done that before.
But if they can get Tupac on stage.
Yeah, hologram Tupac. Do we need a hologram Robin Williams, do we think, in Jumanji?
I think so. Yep. But the film was good fun, and those two were having a lot of fun. I didn't even know until we were in the cinema that Aaron Paul was in it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, me neither, actually.
I didn't know, which is he's not on the posters, he's not anywhere, he hasn't done any press about it, and there he shows up. And how good was he?
For the most part, it was utterly pointless, the whole story.
Oh, yeah. It didn't make a lick of sense.
No.
Did you notice Aaron Paul turned around and went, okay, bitch?
It was the point where Kevin Hart threw a gun at him.
Too slow, bitch.
He went, nice throw, bitch. Yes.
And it's obviously,
which is kind of his catchphrase from Breaking Bad. And I saw him interviewed the other day on something, Aaron Paul, and he was saying about how he gets that every day in the streets. People are always saying to him, you know, say bitch, you'll say science, bitch. And you think, if it's at the point where people are shouting at you in the streets, don't allow it to be in the script.
Yeah,
say no. I want to move on from this if I can.
Aren't you getting it at the moment? When I was in London last week, everyone, Mark, can you say this is skipped to the end and this is Mark and you're not getting it yet?
True story. You did actually meet a couple of fans in the queue for Yoga Hoser, didn't you?
It's actually true. I was stood in the queue literally talking to this guy that was doing my head in. I just need someone to distract me.
I hope he's not listening.
Yeah, he probably won't be listening, but he was doing my head in and, you know, when you just... like you have someone talking to you and you're just like, I can't go anywhere because I'm in a queue and there's no way I can go to the back of the queue, so I'm stuck with this guy. But you know, nice guy, everyone's different, it's fine. He's very different, but the fact, what's the point in this? Oh, so there I was. Yeah, and this guy came up to me and said, I hope you don't mind me asking, but you in Skip to the End. And I was, yeah, I was. And he's like, I love your episode. I love this. And was quoting stuff back to me. He's like, oh, I loved it when you did this, but I thought you were a bit offensive when you said Crypt to the Mend and all this. And I was like, it was weird. It was like someone reading my diary. It was a bit odd.
Was he really giving you shit about some of the stuff you'd
said?
No,
he just said, like, God, sometimes you've got quite close to it, you know, like you've been quite offensive. But I love it. I mean, love that you speak your mind, but it's just a bit, yeah.
Basically, you got a review.
Yeah, of us. So he gave us 8 out of 10. So
that'll do.
That was good.
Yeah.
Back to Central Intelligence. Completely went off topic there. What were we talking about?
We were talking about Aaron Paul, weren't we?
Yes.
Yeah.
Good to see him again. Kind of missed him. Made me realise I want him back on maybe Better Call Saul or something.
He's in a TV series at the minute called The Path where he plays a guy who's a member of a cult. It's not good. It's boring. So
imagine going
that.
From Breaking Bad to that.
No.
You'd just be like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
So Kevin Hart, I want to talk a bit more about him. I don't know a lot of him. I know that obviously he's been in quite a lot of the same sort of comedies we've seen, haven't we?
Well, this is his second film we've reviewed in four.
In two episodes, yeah.
He's doing a lot.
Mm.
And I've seen him for like, is it called like Celebrity Spit Roast or something?
he's a very funny.
What? Celebrity Spit Roast?
I don't think it's Celebrity
something
Spit
Roast.
Roast.
They put
it's
this
probably
guy...
a Celebrity Roast.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
Not Spit Roast. That'll be an entirely different programme.
So Mark has seen a Celebrity Roast and in the filter in his brain, it's become Celebrity Spit Roast.
Yeah. Maybe that's an idea he had for a show.
Next week, our new game show. But no, he's quite funny on that. He's quite good. He's got a lot of energy.
He's a very funny dude.
Yeah. He is, yeah. And I think he's pretty much the top earning comedian in America at the minute. His tours gross more than anyone else's.
It's got to be like him or Chris Rock.
Well, Chris Rock doesn't really tour so much now because he's an old man, relatively. Whereas Hart is the new young thing. It's basically him and Louis C.K. make all the money. And because of that, he's striking while the iron's hot. People are offering him these movies. And you said, Mark, he's making a lot of movies that are very samey.
Is it like Ride Along and Ride Along? All these
Ride Along,
things?
Ride Along 2.
Yeah.
I imagine Ride Along and Ride Along 2 probably would be quite similar. Yeah.
he played a very similar character across those two films. But it's true, and he played a very similar character in Get Hard, which is a shite film, and it pains me to diss a Will Ferrell film, as you know, because I love it. But he's not great. It's not a great film, and he is just himself in that. So I think he does need to branch out a little bit, but he's a fun guy. He's got a good on-screen presence, and I enjoy his work. One of the things I wanted to bring up about this film was one of the opening scenes, it's set back when they were in high school, and you see Rock, Dwayne Johnson, when he was overweight. And what they've done is they've clearly used CGI to put the Rock's face onto a fat kid's body. And it was, I would go as far as to say, slightly better than when they put his face on the Scorpion King. The CGI has moved on a tad.
Just slightly.
Yeah.
That scene was a bit weird.
Yeah.
I associate him so much as just being one of the best built guys in the world. His body is unreal.
All right, Mark. Keep it in your pants.
I'm not sure whether it was a character point or whether it was just an excuse to get the Rock naked at the end of the film.
Yes, of course, because he then strips off at the high school reunion.
So,
yeah.
Maybe he put that in. He was like, no, what we do is we do this, and then I can get my guns out at the end of the film, and it'd be amazing. And they're just like, yeah, sure, whatever, Dwayne.
Just flex your pecs, go for it, yeah.
I do love The Rock. I love him more and more. Like, as time goes on, the only thing that's put me off is I've heard he's going to be in the remake of Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
And if he does that, he's dead to me.
That and Jumanji. Wow.
I know. I just, that would kill it for me.
I don't know. He might do a really good job with it.
He might do, but it won't be as good as the original. One of the things I hear, I read a lot about him or read interviews with him, and people who've met him always say the same thing. He is the nicest guy in Hollywood. Yeah. There's no artifice. He's just putting it on for, you know, anyone who works with him always says he's genuinely the nicest guy. And I think it comes from the fact that he was a wrestler, which is frowned upon, you know, in entertainment circles. Wrestlers aren't held as being big cool icons like they once were. So to come from that and then to fight through to the point where you're one of the biggest draws in Hollywood, you've got to stay humble about that shit. He's grateful for where he is coming from where he was.
You see it all the time, like whenever there's like a WrestleMania, so he always goes back and does something there.
Yeah.
He'll always like randomly appear on like Monday Night Raw in wrestling because he loves it. He loves his fan base from there. And you see, like, he puts loads of photos of him and his mum.
Yes,
on Instagram
He's
clearly very grounded.
If he's that grounded and humble, prove it. Come on this podcast.
Come on, skip to the end.
Good point.
Go on.
Good point.
That you've heard how much we all love you.
Yeah.
Get on here. Start tweeting him. If you listen to this episode, start tweeting him. Let's see if he does it. It's the sort of weird thing you'd look at it and go, do you know what? I'll do that.
Yeah, he's going to come to my flat.
We'll go to him. We'll go to him if he pays.
Yeah, if he wants to fly us out to Florida, I'm happy.
That's absolutely fine. I'm up for that. I really liked him in this film as well. Not just his chemistry with Hart, but it was kind of different from him.
Rock, I loved his character.
His character was great, and the way Rock played him was great, because Rock generally in films plays one of two characters. He's either just kind of a witty, snarky, funny guy, or he's a stone-cold badass. But in this, he was a bit of a badass, because he's a CIA agent, but he was also quite naive.
Yeah.
Because he was a nerdy, bullied fat kid, he never quite grew out of that as an adult, so he was quite naive and a bit funny and grateful to have a friend. And I'd never seen Johnson play anything like that before, and I thought he nailed it.
I love the bit where he took his sweater off and he's just had like a unicorn t-shirt. Like, yeah, man, unicorns are awesome.
Yeah.
The last time I saw him on such a serious role like that, where you saw that kind of emotion, was the Tooth Fairy.
Yeah.
That's the last time I sort of got a hint of that he could do those other emotions.
But I really loved him in this. I thought his character was great. I really enjoyed everything his character was trying to do as well. I liked the whole fact that he was like a bit of a nerdy fat kid at the time. And when there's a scene when he goes to see one of the kids that bullied him,
to
get like an internet banking code, and he just kind of like, he's a bit hurt by what the guy's saying to him, like he's still bullying him, bullying him, and then he just at the end he just punches him.
Yeah, cleans his clock. Yeah.
So it's clearly part of his act. He didn't get his. It's like, I don't like bullies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a great performance, and not a bad film at all.
No, not
as we said, it was fun. I enjoyed it. I haven't got a heck of a lot more to say about it. Have you, chaps?
Not really. No.
There's not much else to say, really. Should we score it?
Let's.
Oh, it's a funny one to score. I can't go too high.
I'm just going to go 6 now. It was good fun. There was a lot to like about it. It didn't really make a lot of sense, but 6, I think it's a fair result.
It's a hard one to review, but let's go with it, 6.
I'm going to be a bit more generous. It was a kind of typical midsummer light comedy. I'm going to give it 7. It did what
That's
it wanted
fair.
To do.
That's fair.
Still gets 6.
Still gets 6 overall, yeah.
It's competition time. Now, on the last episode, we ran a competition for The Conjuring 2, and it was to win a prize pack that had loads and loads of stuff in it, absolutely loads, like T-shirts, a hoodie. I think I'd said there was it a hand?
Yeah, you'd conjured up a lot for that.
A lot, a diary.
It was
the
book where if you put your hand on it, the colour changes.
Your hand, remember that. Loads and loads of stuff, and I've seen the film recently, and I actually really enjoyed it. For as far as sequels go, it was pretty good.
I love that. Whenever we do say something like that, we always sound really surprised. actually really enjoyed it.
I thought it was going to be a pile of shit, but it was all right.
I actually really enjoyed it, yeah.
The question I put out there was, who directed The Conjuring 2? So do you want to know... Do you want to know?
Yeah, go on, man.
It was James Wan.
Ah, of course.
So do you want to know who won the competition?
Oh, you're shocking.
It was Scott Bishop on Facebook. So we'll be sending that out to you. And I'd like a photo of your hand changing colour.
Yes, please.
I think that's the
That'd
least.
Be good, yeah. I'd enjoy that.
Scotty the Bish.
So for the next competition, see what I've done here. This is good. We're going to give away, thanks to Universal, a Central Intelligence Bundle.
Oh, I love
see
this.
How we've done that.
Ooh, synergy.
So in that, you get a sports bag, a hoodie, a T-shirt and a watch.
Does the T-shirt have a unicorn on it?
It doesn't. That'd be a shame. I'd like that.
Be good. Nice synergy.
It's got the logo and looks pretty good. Mm-hmm. And you get a watch, which is always very good. So we've talked about it in the review about 5 minutes ago. The question I'm putting out there, Dwayne Johnson plays what character in Central Intelligence? Tweet us the name. Facebook us the name.
I don't think we actually mentioned the name.
We didn't, which is fine for the quiz, but... He has his real name and his CIA name. So which one are we asking
for? Which one are we asking for?
You tell me, Ben.
I want his real name, his name that he had at high school.
There you go. So if you go on skiptheend.co.uk and let us know by any of our social media channels, we will announce the winner in 2 weeks' time. And remember what Ben said, it's his real name.
Mm-hmm.
We're coming to the end of the 80s for Skip Back now. Mm-hmm. You must be devastated.
It just means I've got 2 episodes left until I'm gone.
Yeah.
Is that it?
I think, to be honest, we may as well all knock it on the
head. Should we bin it off?
Done.
Yeah.
Bin it off.
Not done. Now or yeah. in a couple
well,
of weeks?
No, well, I want to announce that I'm releasing my solo album in a couple of weeks anyway. So
you, Mark, I'm going to work on a project with Lamar.
Nice. Man. And then we'll do the reunite after a year, and our first album back will just be the greatest hits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
Be fantastic.
So, 1981.
So, Ben.
Now, we said this at the end of last Skip Back in Time, that this year isn't particularly good in comparison to all the years we've done recently. So there are films I like. I don't think there's any film from this year that I truly love. So I've gone with the one that I like the most. And I've got a feeling I might have the same one as you, Mark. I've gone for Escape from New York.
Nope.
Ooh.
I'm glad you've gone for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's one of the classic pairings of John Carpenter and Kurt Russell. I think they've done maybe three or four films.
What did they do after that? I've not heard of any of the films.
They did this little thing.
Little thing.
Obviously, they did that. Big Trouble in Little China. The sequel to Escape from New York, Escape from LA, which I don't think I've seen, or if I have, I've only seen it once. It's not great. But Escape from New York is brilliant. Again, as you know, because of my love of Blade Runner, I'm drawn to any kind of dystopian future. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I love about this dystopian future in Escape from New York is that it's set in 1997. The world has gone to shit in 1997. Manhattan is a floating prison colony, effectively.
I believe that's what would have happened if the Spice Girls hadn't come around in 1995.
So they put us on a different path.
Yeah, they split us off from that.
Thank God for Scary Spice. The idea of this film is genius. The fact that the world has gone to shit, so they put up walls around Manhattan, and it's now a prison. There are no guards in there. The prisoners just run riot. The president is flying over in Air Force One. Back in the day, they were known as freedom fighters. We call them terrorists now. They were flying over. They took over the plane. The president came out in an escape pod, landed in this prison colony. They needed someone to go and rescue him. Just so happened that Snake Plissken, Kurt Russell's character, had just been arrested. He was, of course, ex-Special Forces. Just the man for the job. They send him in to find the president. It's genius. That is one of the... We've talked before about how some films like The Mask, the pitch meeting must have been a shocker, because how do you pitch a film like The Mask? This one would have been the easiest pitch. Like the way I've just described it there, if I was a movie executive, I'd gone, yeah, how much money do you need? Yeah. I'll double it. Whatever you want, take it, make that movie. And the execution is as good as the idea. Great film.
Well, the thing is, I've seen that film 50, 60 times, not exaggerating, and you just saying it then, I was like, oh my God, this sounds awesome. Yeah, I'm going to go watch it. And I'm like, hang on, I've seen this film. Shut up, Mark. But yeah.
It's true. You get excited when someone tells you about it. Yeah.
Like,
even though you've already seen it.
Yeah, it is genuinely. Because I was looking for what I wanted to be my pick for 81, I ended up watching three films at the weekend from that year to determine which one I wanted to go with. So I watched Escape from New York, I watched Stripes, an old Bill Murray comedy, and I watched Escape to Victory. Which is have you ever seen Escape to Victory? A very bizarre film about prisoner of war playing football, starring Pelé and Sylvester Stallone. It's the weirdest
now,
film.
The pitch meeting for that.
Right, listen up, executives. I've got Pelé, I've got Sly Stallone. He's in goal. What more do you want?
They're both on board. Are you?
I hope I've not stepped on anyone's choice there, Mark. Have you gone for Escape to Victory?
Well, that's it. What am I supposed to say now? He's just completely gone with it.
Go on then, Mark. What have you got?
Evil Dead.
Good choice, yeah. Not a bad film.
For me, you know that horror is my genre, and I think it's one of the greatest films made. Now, this is scary. The budget for that film was $350,000. Mm. That's it. Bruce Campbell's kind of first major role where he really exploded on the scene, and everyone's like, this guy's great. The Chin himself. And I think we've both... I think you only watched it last year, didn't you, for the first time?
I did. I watched all three of them in one day, yeah.
And you like the third one best?
I like the third one best.
But it's a story about the Ash who goes with his three friends and his girlfriend to stay in a cabin in the woods, which is terrifying in itself. They find a book, which then basically brings back the dead. And it's very, very shocking. Have you seen it, Adam?
Yeah, I've seen Evil Dead.
The scene in the woods with the raping by a tree.
Yeah.
It's pretty hardcore, and again,
sorry,
the wrong term to use.
I'm not laughing at rape. I'm just laughing at the last time we discussed this, because I remember us being confused when Mark said raped by a tree. I didn't know if he meant that the tree had committed the rape or if the rape was near to a tree, because raped by a tree isn't clear.
Yeah.
But now I've seen
the
film.
She was raped by a tree.
Actually, the tree committed the act.
And again, it's practical effects, which you know how much I respect and love. And the way that the tree ties her down and the way it's all filmed, it's like that sort of stop motion. It looks really well done. But I just think it's a really well-made horror, and it's Sam, what's his name? Raimi, who's Raimi. Now gone on to do stuff like, unfortunately, Spider-Man 3. But he had
He also did Spider-Man 1 and 2.
Which were great. Yeah. But we haven't seen him for a while either, have we? What's he up to now?
Sam Raimi, I don't know. I know he was part of the TV series for Evil Dead.
Which was good.
But I don't know what films he's directed in a while. I've not seen anything.
Drag Me to Hell?
Yes, but he's not. That's still quite a long time ago. Mm. So maybe he's sticking with TV and doing Ash vs. Evil Dead. But Evil Dead is one of those kind of... If I had to pick my top 10 horrors, it would be in there. And I do... I won't argue. I think 81 was a pretty piss poor year.
Yeah.
There was just, as I said, there are a lot of good films, but nothing truly
on that level
great.
One.
Yeah.
Adam?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I kind of went with the film that I probably watched the most from childhood sort of onwards, Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark. I know, Ben, you're not a huge fan of Indiana Jones.
Not my cup of tea.
Yeah, but there is a sense of adventure and enjoyment that I still get from this film because I remember how it made me feel as a kid. I remember all the emotions it made me feel as a kid. When they open the ark at the end and it literally burns the Nazi skulls off, that was just frightening to me as a child. But Harrison Ford is one of the coolest dudes to ever exist.
Big time.
You can literally put him in pretty much any lead role and he'll make that character unbelievably just awesome. Mm-hmm. And an archaeology professor with a hat and a whip shouldn't sound great.
No.
But it just
is. It sounds like something you used to watch on like Men and Motors.
Does it?
A man with a whip who's a teacher.
Granada Men and Motors. I remember that channel.
15 minutes at midnight. You're like, quick, my mom's coming downstairs. Turn it off.
Back before porn was porn.
I know. You used to get that 10 on Television X. You used to get 5 minutes
The 10-minute preview.
Yeah.
I don't know what you mean. I've never heard of it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. 15. It was never that long. I couldn't quite finish.
I couldn't last that long.
So talking about that.
Again, when you think about pitch meetings, imagine going to someone and being like, I've got an idea. Archaeology professor. He's looking for a lost Ark of God, Ark of the Covenant, and he's fighting off Nazi soldiers.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that?
And we're going to need a lot of budget.
Yeah, we're going to need a lot of bunts for this.
A lot of bunts for that, yeah.
A lot of bunts. But it is one of those films that just kind of like, it scares you towards the end, but it's just so iconic. Mm-hmm. And I had to choose it.
And I think the reason why I don't like the Indiana Jones films is precisely why you do like them. You saw them as a child, they gave you that sense of wonder, and you've maintained that watching them now. I didn't watch them as a kid, so I didn't have that. Mm. I've come to them as an adult. I've only seen two of them, the first and the fourth, and didn't really care for them.
Yeah, we've spoke before, haven't we, about like Star Wars, if your house was Star Wars, if your house was Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Mine was both, essentially. Like, my parents don't really watch a lot of films, but I did as a kid.
Yeah.
I think it was more to shut me and my brothers up more than
anything. Yeah, probably.
So I kind of saw both Star Wars and Indiana Jones.
That's lucky, because everyone I know is either like you, Ben, Star Wars, or Men at Work for me.
Men at Work. It was the house it was I was very at. Much Men at Work household.
That was it, yeah. Of course, son. Like, Dad, I've seen this 4 times now.
It's all right. It's the greatest film ever. So, yeah, Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Must be the first time in a while we've had three different choices.
It is. In recent years... Or episodes/years, you know what I mean? We've either all had the same or at least two of us have. So yeah, it's been a while, I think.
Social media have done very well. Indiana Jones came through about 150 times.
Of course.
I'm not going to read them all out for that. But Philip Hander said, easily his third favourite film of all time, An American Werewolf in London, which is a very good... It's probably the greatest werewolf film ever made, in my opinion.
Mm. What, Teen Wolf?
Wow. Twilight 3.
Ian Hardy agrees, Escape from New York. Rebecca McIntosh just said Mad Max 2.
Was that 81?
That was 81,
I think
yeah.
Tina Turner's in that one.
Isn't that third
that's one? Thunderdome,
yeah. Oh, ignore me. Sarah Buddery has said she wants to go a bit left field and go with The Fox and the Hound. It ruined her childhood and traumatised her. And I had to go back and say, tell me more. Like,
yeah. So that's your favourite film of that year?
I like the fact she's gone with something different. I was like, did you get a toy and poo the bed? You know, is it that? Is it that traumatised? Or she said... They wanted to be friends, but society wouldn't let them.
Ah, serious message.
Ooh, and that message is as true today as it was then.
Yeah.
They knew. Scott, which is Chicando 2, has to put Indy for the win without no diggity of doubt. I like that. Put a soundbite in there. Sean Canary has put Escape from New York. No other arguments are valid.
Fair enough, play. Yeah.
And finally, Krish Smolowski has put Fox and the Hound, and The Great Muppet Caper.
I've never seen a Muppet film, and nor will I ever. What is this Fox and Hound malarkey? I've never heard of
this. It's a Disney film.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's why I've not seen it.
Yeah.
Rewatch coming up soon. But yeah, stick around for next
the
time.
End it's of an era.
1980.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Has anyone looked?
I have, yeah.
Any good?
Yeah.
Stick around. Wow. Yeah.
I mean, there's one great one, and then a lot of other things.
What kind of rat bastard psychotic would play that song right now at this moment?
Magic moments when two hearts are kissed. Magic moments, memories we've been sharing. I'll never forget the moment we kissed the night of the Hay.
Rewatch this week is Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. A film that I've chosen because I've not seen it in a while, but it was a film that when I last saw it, I used to watch it a lot, sort of in my university years. A fantastic film then, and I kind of wanted to see if it'd still hold up. And I wanted to see what you guys think, because truthfully, this wasn't a successful film. It was critically mauled. Even now, if you go and look at Metacritic, it has 41. If you look on Rotten Tomatoes, it has 49. It completely bombed at the box office. It took 10 million total from an 18 million budget, which is piss all. Even Beverly Hills Chihuahua 3 took more than that, I assume. So this wasn't a successful film. So it's kind of a litmus test for me as to whether people like this or not. For those that don't know, it is a semi-fictional account of a road trip that the legendary journalist Hunter S. Thompson took with his lawyer, Oscar Zeta Acosta. When he wrote about this in the book of the same name, he changed the name of himself to his alter ego of Raoul Duke. He changed Acosta's name to Dr. Gonzo. It was essentially to protect them because they did a lot of illegal shit on that road trip. So that's why they changed their names. Terry Gilliam, visionary director, then made this film with Johnny Depp playing Hunter S. Thompson and with Benicio del Toro playing Dr. Gonzo, Oscar Zeta Acosta. And it is a wild, wild film. Adam, thoughts?
We've finally done it. We have finally answered the question, when was Johnny Depp's last greatest performance?
Yeah.
Here it is.
He's magnificent, isn't he?
He is magnificent. This film is utterly mental.
Yes, it is.
It is a film that constantly talks about how high they were,
mm-hmm.
different drugs, well, you know, LSD, acid tabs, etc.
Yeah.
And it's all shown, essentially, in the accounts of what's happening. Because there is no way in hell half of this could have took place.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you are off your tits.
Yeah. It is basically a drug-fueled road trip. And one of the opening scenes, they're driving down the road in like a caddy, or it's a fancy open-top American car. They're driving from LA or from California down to Las Vegas. And Hunter goes into the boot of the car to have a look what's in there. And he's listing all the drugs they've got with him. And like you've mentioned some of it there. He says that they've got a bag full of, you know, pills. They've got mescaline. They've got weed. They've ether. Got a salt shaker full of cocaine. They've got ether. There's nothing they don't have, essentially. And I think the line is, you know, when you get locked into a serious drug collection, you go the whole way or something like that, you know. It's amazing. And then it's a kind of an account of how all of those individual drugs affect them. And it's twisted.
This film is a film that I think is very Marmite. I think if I meet people and they, not a hardcore film fan watching this, would probably turn around to me and say, I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I would not argue, because I think I can see why people wouldn't enjoy it, because it's so out there. It's so mental. It does feel like you're on drugs when you're watching it.
Yeah.
And I'm on the opposite kind of, I'm going to Munchie Town. No, I love the film.
Yeah.
I think it's absolutely fantastic. I appreciate everything it's about. Every performance in this film is incredible. Mm-hmm. Every actor, every actress, everything about it is amazing. The soundtrack, I literally went straight on iTunes and bought it because I was like, this is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, I forgot how good it is.
Like the Jefferson Airplane songs and stuff.
So good. Yeah. So, so good. But it depressed me that kind of those actors aren't now giving out performances that they were back then.
You say that, but Benicio del Toro was in Sicario and was an absolute badass.
Tobey Maguire.
Fair. Yeah, no,
Cameron
fair.
Diaz.
I'd forgotten that Tobey Maguire was a little albino hitchhiker.
Yeah. To be honest, all he does is just look monged out. Yeah. Me. But, yeah. I just Johnny Depp is incredible. And he deserves an Oscar. He deserves everything for that performance. Yeah. And I can see why people wouldn't give him the credit because they're just, it's too weird. But it just depressed me. Like, that guy's not putting out... I mean, Yoga Hosers he's in and it's pretty damn good.
Oh, dear.
I don't know, like, what happened to his career. I think... Did he do this thinking, that's great, I'll get some more serious roles now. I won't just be seen as kind of that weird actor who plays the quirky characters. And then it just went the opposite way. And he only became known as the actor who plays the quirky characters.
The worst thing that ever happened to him was Pirates of the Caribbean. Yeah. Because it was... The first one is a fun film, but it's a silly little film that shouldn't have been the massive worldwide success it was. But it spawned this big Disney franchise, and then he was locked into playing these kind of blockbuster, wacky characters, and he's done more and more, like the Alice in Wonderland ones and shit. And that was never the path he should have gone down, because he was an indie kid. He was the kid who starred in low-budget, weird-ass indie films like Edward Scissorhands. And this, you know, this had, as I say, it was only a budget of $18 million, which is piss-all in Hollywood money terms.
Yeah.
These are the kind of films Johnny Depp excels in. So why he persists with these nonsense, big, over-the-top roles is beyond me, because he is squandering his talent. That's why it was nice to see him in that, what was it called, that gangster film recently, where he played Whitey Bulger. Yeah, wasn't an amazing film by any stretch, but it's arguably the best work he's done in a long while.
A good chance for him to showcase what he can actually do.
Yeah, and I think he could have been awarded things for that. I think people overlooked it, because the film on its own wasn't that great, and also people just have a dim view of him these days. But he's a talented dude. Never let it be said that he's not talented, he's just made bad choices.
Do you know, I was really surprised. And
Bad choices that resulted in a lot of money for him.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I know I've mentioned him a lot, but it's something that really blew my mind. At the Kevin Smith show, he worked, obviously, with Tusk, and he's good friends with Kevin Smith and Johnny Depp. I didn't realise this, but they were talking on set behind behind in makeup and stuff, and Johnny Depp has never, ever in his life watched any of his performances. He's too insecure and doesn't feel he's good enough. He'll do the films and put them out. But Kevin said, like, oh, my God, Jack Sparrow, when you were Edward Scissorhands. And he says, honestly, I have no idea what you're talking about, because I've done the film and then I put it to bed and I never watch it because I'd be too critical of my own performance.
So odd.
And I'm like, you're missing out, dude.
Yeah.
Like, you need to watch Blow, you know.
I mean, you're not missing a lot, but you're missing
not recently.
But that blows my mind.
And it's a shame as well, because you think if you've put that much work in, you should be able to enjoy the fruits of your labour.
Yeah.
Like, for this character, going back to Fear and Loathing, he lived in Hunter S. Thompson's basement for 4 months just so that he could be around him and get hold of his mannerisms and his speech patterns and so on. And that's why he is... I don't know if you guys have ever seen Hunter Thompson interviewed on anything.
Never.
There's a brilliant documentary that you need to go and seek out called Gonzo, and it's directed by Alex Gibney, who's the greatest documentary director in the world, who's done, you know, like the Lance Armstrong one and Maxima Culpa.
Presumably it's about Gonzo journalism.
It's specifically about Hunter S. Thompson. It's about his life and work. And in that, you get to see the man a lot interviewed. And Depp nailed him. Didn't nail him as much as Bill Murray did. Have you ever heard of a film called Where the Buffalo Roam?
I've heard of it, but I've not watched it.
This was an older film where Bill Murray plays Hunter S. Thompson. He got his vocals slightly... Because Bill Murray is a mimic, that was part of his job.
Is Raoul Duke again?
No, he's just playing Hunter in this, because it's more about Oscar Acosta than it is about Hunter. And it's not Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, it's a different story, but it's still true. Because Bill Murray was a mimic by trade, that's how he got on Saturday Night Live, being able to do impressions, he nails Hunter better than Depp does. But Depp has the mannerism, because he was around him for 4 months.
He picked up every little detail.
Every little, like, there's weird things where you see him at the typewriter, and instead of just typing, his hands are sort of moving in a weird kind of serpentine motion before he puts them down on the keyboard. And then watching this documentary, you see Hunter S. Thompson do little weird ticks like that, and you think, God damn, this performance is so well observed. So it's a shame that he hasn't even watched it himself.
No, never.
And I kind of want him to. I want someone to put a gun to his head and make him watch all of his performances so he realises, oh shit, I need to go back to the indie, low-budget stuff.
Or at least just puts like two or three of his older stuff next to two or three of his newer stuff.
Yeah.
And says, look!
Yeah.
It sounds harsh, but I think Tim Burton isn't... I think he's kind of responsible. I think he did too many in a row. He should have had a break. He was literally doing Willy Wonka. But he did so many Tim Burton films, it became a joke. Like, oh, Tim Burton's got a new film out. Guess who's in it? His missus. The soundtrack's going to be by, oh, here we go, and Johnny Depp every time. I'm going to mention a couple of scenes that I made notes on. I don't normally make notes on the rewatch, but I had to. The reptile zoo scene, how well it was done.
Yeah.
That was really freaky. They looked bloody good. It looked like Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Like, and it shouldn't look that good. It reminded me of kind of the Star Wars canteen scene.
It's because they were real puppets.
Yeah, and it worked very well.
Yeah.
And the second one I had to do is the circus scene when the Mini-Me was there.
It was actually Vern Troyer. It wasn't really me.
And the courts of casino.
The whole circus casino thing. I had to pause it for about 2 minutes. It was just a bit weird.
Very trippy.
I was just like, what is going on?
And that's about an hour and a half in. So you've already had an hour and a half of being really tested to the core. Yeah. And then, you know, that is the point where you're like, this is a bit too mental. But how well was it done?
But obviously, the idea
flawless.
The idea that this story is kind of fact and fiction kind of smashed together, it's unsurprising just for the fact that he probably can't remember most of the stuff that happened.
Yeah.
No.
So you're not going to get the full story.
What he used to do is he would have a tape recorder running whilst they were up to their antics. And then he'd wake up the next morning with very little recollection of what went on and then listen back to the tapes and then write up what had happened. And as you say, it's the melding of fact and fiction. That's what this whole gonzo journalism thing is. It's reporting of the fact, but by putting yourself in the middle of it and using metaphor and allegory to make it bigger than the truth. Mm-hmm. And by getting at the essential truth by kind of spinning a yarn. It's a magnificent... I'm a complete Hunter S. Thompson nerd. I've read almost everything he's ever written. He was a god to me, and the world is poorer since he died. But I just love this film so much because it's a great representation of the book. Mm-hmm. It's probably not the best collection of his work. I think Hell's Angels is probably a better book. And Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail is amazing as well. They could make so many films of his work.
Just of his,
Yeah. But this film is just perfect. It is so like the book, so true to the spirit. And I think in large part, it's not just Depp, it's Terry Gilliam. Because Terry Gilliam is a nut job.
He is a wacky person by nature.
He's a lunatic. And then if you see any of his films like Brazil, he just has a very weird way of seeing the world and of seeing, of putting films on screen. So to pick someone who you want to display this hallucinatory trip, the whole film is like a hallucination. He was the best possible director they could have got.
Well, that's the point, though. The whole point of this film is that we never really see them sober.
Yeah.
From the moment we're introduced to them, they're already high on whatever, driving towards Nevada.
Yeah.
They're drunk when they make the decision to go to Las Vegas. And
Two hours later, they're still off their face.
There's one scene in it, actually, that made me laugh, and it made me think of a modern film. You know the bit where they're pulling up to one of the casinos and they decide to... inhale a rag of ether before they get out of the car. And then when they're walking out of the car towards the casino, they're sort of staggering. And it's really like that scene in Wolf of Wall Street. You know, when he takes the drugs and he's on the floor.
The Quaaludes.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the lewd scene. And I hadn't thought, because I hadn't seen this film in a while, I'd forgotten how similar those scenes are.
When we normally do a rewatch, we visit a film that we've not seen in a long time. And I reckon 80% of the films we've done, we've turned around and gone... It didn't hold up.
Like the mask.
It's a letdown. Yeah. It's not as good. This, for me, was better than I remembered. And I loved it back in the day at uni. I remember watching it at uni with a lot of my friends that were drinking and participating in probably a couple of cigarettes that had stuff in. And, you know, and
tobacco.
Yeah. And it was a wacky experience. But to watch it now, I appreciated it a lot more for what it was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's a question I want to ask you, Ben. You were just talking about how good the writer is. You've got all his stuff. You know, you worship him. I'm new to him, so now I don't want to go and read the book because I will associate too much with the film and I can't block it out. I just can't.
That wouldn't be a bad thing,
so
though.
Give me something that he's done that I should now go out and read that hasn't been done in a film that I will just jizz over.
It depends, because it depends how much you give a shit about politics and politics in the 1970s of America.
Not a lot.
There's a book called Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail, 72, where he is following around the people who are going to be the Democratic nomination for the presidency in that year. And it's a brilliantly written book. And to be honest, it transcends politics. It doesn't matter if you don't care or know about 1970s politics. It's just a great fucking read. And it sums up his whole thing. You know, he would go to these meetings high as a kite and ask questions that no one should ask. He gets kicked off like the press plane because he's drugged up and all these, you know, suit and tie press men are asking the right questions. There's a bit where one of the candidates, he just takes a disliking to him. So he invents the name of a drug. And he starts saying that rumours have been spreading that this candidate has been on this drug. And every time you see him at one of his speeches, when he does this thing, that's one of the symptoms of this drug. And he managed to effectively turn this guy from the front runner to destroying his chances. And George McGovern ended up getting the nomination, who was a loser. He was the guy that no one thought would get it. But because Hunter was pro McGovern and anti this other chap, whose name I've forgotten, he swung what happened there.
All I can think of is cake is a made-up drug.
A metabolically bisturbile drug. It's a fucking disgrace.
But no, it was amazing to go back to this film. It's been easily 15 years since I've watched it, and I absolutely loved it. And I recommend, if you're listening now, go and buy the soundtrack or stream it because it's incredible.
It's an odd one because I agree with both of you. I think this film holds up.
Yeah.
I loved it. Watching it a second, third time, probably third time now. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, this is really cool. It's really wacky, really trippy. But if anyone was to say they've watched it and they didn't really like it, I could kind of understand it.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Your brain has to be in tune to it, I think.
Yeah, so when you say, like, oh, I got pan critically, you're like, well, yeah, I can kind of see that. But I personally really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I would never argue with that person that doesn't like it because I can
just
see it.
Like you say, your brain just has to be tuned a certain way.
Yeah.
It's like just when you're recommending the books to Mark, then it all depends on what you care about as subject matter. You can't recommend a journalist book or a book by a journalist unless you care about what's going on.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm intrigued now to read. I probably will read the book version because...
Yeah, read this one different? First. Read Fear and Loathing Last... Not yeah. really. The film was a great representation Good. Of it. A lot of the stuff was ripped directly from the page. A lot of the... Because you know, a lot of the film is spoken in voiceover.
Yeah.
And a lot of those voiceovers are word for word. They're verbatim from the book and other books. Like there's a bit at the end where Oscar Acosta, Dr. Gonzo, gets on the plane. And Hunter S. Thompson says something like he's one of God's own prototypes. He's a mutant, too weird to live, too rare to die, which is a fantastic quote. Awesome. But that's not from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. That's from the foreword that Hunter wrote in Oscar Zeta Acosta's biography. Oh, so that they use bits from other places.
I like that.
But it's magnificent, man.
I'm ready to score it.
Me too.
I'm going to go out there now because I've been blown away by it. And it's been a while since a rewatch has blown me away. 9. Which is big, but I enjoyed it that much.
Yeah.
And I've not bought a soundtrack for ages, so I've just gone out and done that. So that's big for me.
I'm going to say an 8.
Yeah.
It could easily be a 9, but I just think 8's probably a fair score for it. I might revisit my score in a year's time or something.
Yeah.
But for me right now, it's probably an 8.
I was predestined to like it because I love the person that it's about. I love old Johnny Depp. I love Terry Gilliam as a director. I loved it in my teens when I first watched it, and I can't understand why I've not seen it in so long, because it's brilliant. And I don't use this word often, unlike Mark. It's a masterpiece. And for me, it's a 10. And I watched it, I thought, I was like, yeah, I'm going to end up giving this an 8 or 9 probably. But by the time I got to the end, I was like, I just love it so much. It's a 10 for me. So overall, 9 out of 10.
Wow. It's been a while since we've scored something that high.
Yeah.
Still not the
we've
perfect 10.
We've been watching
10.
Shit, that's all. Yes,
very true.
And now it's my choice.
Yeah.
So... The next episode is a big one for us. It's episode 50.
Indeed.
It's huge.
And the last thing I want us to do is I'll reveal now our next review will be the Ghostbusters film. The new one. I'm not going to prejudge, but I don't think we're going to love it. I don't. So I want to kind of...
Hold on. I don't want to prejudge. Then he prejudges.
But not to... I've got a sneaky feeling that we won't be raving about it because we are very in love with the original.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, like, I'm not going to prejudge, but it's going to be shit.
And just on that tap, before we move on to
of
your
course,
choice.
Let's take
her. We all heard the new version of the Ghostbusters theme by Fall Out Boy. Now, I assume, Adam, you bloody love it because Fall Out Boy, Wheatus, all those kind of bands. that's your genre, isn't it?
Yeah? Big fan.
So I bet you love it, don't you?
No, I don't actually. No.
Isn't it featuring like Missy Elliott or something?
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
Mark sent me the link to it and on a text, and my text back to him was, I got 29 seconds in before I had to turn it off.
You see,
it was that awful.
I have been a fan of Fall Out Boy in the past. When they came back after their hiatus, the album they did was really good. Mm. I thought it was really good, really strong. They did another album after it called American Beauty, American Psycho. Fucking awful.
Welcome to Fall Out Boy cast.
Yeah. Fucking awful.
Full cast, yeah.
And this, wank.
Oh. Well, the next rewatch is going to be The Life and Times of Fall Out Boy. I want a film that we're going to love. I want a film that we can rave about. We've talked about it a lot. I can't believe it's took us to episode 50 to choose it. It's pretty obvious. It's going to be Shaun of the Dead.
Nice.
It is miraculous we've not...
It's
about
bizarre.
Yeah.
We've talked about it bits. We've talked about it today. Mm-hmm. But we've never given it the time and the love and the dedication that we should be.
You've got red on you. You actually looked at your shirt. I have to.
So next time, grab a cornetto. We're going to be doing Shaun of the Dead.
I can't wait already.
right, guys. I'm the games master for the most famous game ever recorded on the podcast, Lost the Plot. Now,
I think Lost in Translation is probably more famous now.
It's a close one, but Lost the Plot I'm having fun with.
Are you forgetting we had Jim Bowen?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well. Raging Bullseye. Yeah.
No celebrities this time, but for anyone that hasn't listened to the last couple of episodes, what happens is I pick 12 films and put them in a very nice pot, which is available from Wilkinson's, which I'll be putting on Instagram later on. This is different to Adam's. It's got a different lid and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Cheap plug there for Wilkinson's for all your household needs.
And on there, there'll be a title of a film. So, for example, Wayne's World. And it's down to whoever picks out of the Wilkinson's pot. So either Ben or... you'll come to my house next week and there'll be Tupperware everywhere. I'm like, yep, I signed a deal.
Other pots are available.
Yes, and Adam to describe, without using the title of the film, any of the actors' names, any of the actual characters' names. And you can't say it's a horror film or it's Mark's favourite film.
Only you have done that.
I've only done that, but... I did tell you that I was going to screw you badly on the next episode. I haven't. I've not been horrible and put like Scandinavian black and white films from 1967. I've not. I've been generous.
Good.
I bet he has.
This is quite a big game because I've lost a lot of games recently. Mm-hmm. And basically, if you two nail it and get 10, I will be joint bottom of Adam. And I don't want to lose. I can't be associated with losing again.
So what did we get last time, Mark? Team Barky Bark.
8. Was it 8? Which was unreal.
Okay.
You've won anyway. Well,
I've won it. Standard.
Which is the standard, which is frustrating as hell. But I'm looking forward to it. I think you'll squirm a little bit with some of these because they're just they're not easy, but they're not evil. So who would like to go first today?
Adam, you go first.
Okay.
Team Badham, Children of Badham, back once again.
Okay. So it's about someone who works as a janitor at Harvard in Boston.
Yeah. I know where Harvard is. Cheers.
Who is a mathematical genius.
Yeah.
And solves a puzzle that should take the students years to solve.
Yeah.
He solves it quite quickly. He's recognised as a genius by one of the professors there, who sends him to a psychiatrist to help with him and his issues.
I had it after like 3 words. I was just waiting to speak. It's Goodwill Hunting.
Correct.
Just like them apples.
Very nicely done. Feel tense right now.
Okay. This is a film about two siblings who are related by marriage. Their parents get married. One of them then comes to live in the other one's house. They're older than...
Stepbrothers.
Yes.
Not easy, that one.
Try, getting around it by saying siblings.
This is a great start, guys. 2 out of 2. It's going to get harder.
Oh.
While Adam's thinking as well, they get one pass each as well, just to let you know.
Yeah.
So when a child isn't in the room, the things he plays with come to life.
Toy Story 2.
Yes. Correct.
I'm allowing that. Good work. I'm very impressed. You knew I was going to stick sequels in.
This is a film about a young lad teaching his mythical winged creature that breathes fire.
How to Train Your Dragon?
Correct.
Wow. This is good.
This is 4 out of 4 so far.
Yeah.
They're not easy, are they? No, but they're not too hard.
Adam's got the giggles. I'm dreading this one.
Let me see.
So, there are two quite famous martial artists.
Oh, God.
Who fight each other quite notably in the film.
Way of the Dragon.
Yes!
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 Correct.
In. Thank you. How the hell did you get that? Is this 5 out of 5 or 4?
It's 5 out of 5 so far.
Wow.
This film is about a group of space marines on a ship being hunted down by a creature of extraterrestrial origin.
On a ship?
Yeah.
Space marines on a ship?
Possibly. There's definitely space marines, and there's definitely a creature of extraterrestrial origin.
Aliens?
Yes!
How? How? How did you
Are they on
see
a ship
aliens?
In the city? I was conflating the two.
No, it's that's on the planet.
Shit. Yeah.
LV-42.
You still got it. You still got it.
How did you get
I was,
that?
I was trying to think. I was like, thinking about Alien Resurrection. I was like, they're smugglers. They're not space marines.
I'm impressed.
That's six.
Pressure's on, though, now.
I'm going to have to pass that one.
Really?
Yeah.
What was it?
LA Confidential.
Oh, that would have been tough. Yeah.
He's used his pass.
And you get one each.
Okay. So, there is a man who cheats on his wife. She then hatches an elaborate scheme to frame him for her murder. Everyone believes that he has committed the murder.
Yeah.
He smiles at a press conference and gets...
Gone Girl.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Genius.
It's weird that it was like the main thrust of the plot didn't get it for me, but as soon as you said he smiles at a press conference, I remembered. I could just remember Ben Affleck's smirk.
It's all anyone can remember.
This film is about a gang of youths, ne'er-do-wells, led by one in particular, who is arrested after the rape of a woman. He is then forced through some kind
of... Clockwork Orange.
Correct. Good lad.
Jesus Christ. Is that eight?
Eight.
Yeah.
You can't get a perfect 10.
You might.
Too much thought's gone into these titles, and I'm totally blown away.
Oh, fuck's sake.
Oh, is it a tough one?
This is a film that tells the story of a deformed gentleman from Leicester.
The Elephant Man.
Jesus Christ.
Good old Nine. John Merrick. All right, here's my last one, unless I choose
to
pass.
You get a perfect 10, Ben.
Pass.
What was it?
It's Room. Not The Room. Room. Oh. Do you know what? I could have probably described that.
You could have. Yeah.
Pressure's on now.
Okay. Oh, you bastard.
Oh, shit.
Okay. This is a story of a superhero in New York City who has to deal with various villains whilst he's slinging webs around said city. One of those villains is made of sand.
Spider-Man 3.
Honestly, guys.
10 out of 10, baby. Air high five, Adam. Lovely stuff.
I am absolutely blown away. Unreal.
That's pretty good. Pretty good.
You can tell it's the third week of it because we've all got really good at avoiding certain words.
Exactly, yeah.
I really did want to hear you try and describe Room, but...
Okay, the thing is...
You wouldn't be able to do it, though.
I know, reflexively, I passed it away because I didn't want to start talking about The Room. But I could have clearly said it's a film about a mother and her son who are locked in a building and have been for several years, then they escape. I could have done it easily.
Yeah, but Adam could have gone Nanny in the movie.
They never escape. Not in that.
So, is there another game show coming? What's happening? It's episode 50.
Well, on the next episode, episode 50, we're going to do a one-off special. And I am going to I'm gonna tell the people what it's all about, because I want to juice them up and leave them dangling for
the
2 weeks.
The juicy dangler.
I'm the juicy dangler. Everyone knows this. I want the quiz, instead of being about films, to be about the podcast. Because episode 50 is a big celebratory episode.
Big.
What we're going to come and do, we've not come up with a name for this. Oh, in fact, yes, we have. We definitely have got a name, 100%. We're just not telling you. What we're going to do, each of the three of us are going to come prepared with five questions about ourselves, about things that we have said on the podcast. We will then put those out to the other two members, and they then have to answer those. So it's about our knowledge of our own show that we have produced for low these 50 episodes. So for example, this isn't one that Mark's going to do, I'm sure, but Mark could say, what piece of movie merchandise caused me to shit the bed? At which point Adam and I would shout out, inflatable ET! That's the kind of thing we're looking for. So it's about how well do we know each other and how well do we know this podcast? And I think it's going to be a bit of fun.
The most embarrassing part would be that the listeners will be shouting out the right answers. Yeah, and we won't know jack shit.
And I like to think of them shouting them out on like the tube or a bus. You know, inflatable ET! That's what made him shit himself!
Oh, Mark, you listened to that episode as well?
During your commute to work.
So tune in for that in 2 weeks' time.
Right then, chaps. Listener questions. Let's start off with Wayne Saunders, who has said, What is the best film that you guys have ever seen by accident? Was it on TV one night at a friend's house? You've gone to the cinema and saw it because nothing else was on? He said his was Matrix because he knew nothing about it. His brother dragged him to a late night showing after they went to the pub and he loved it.
Wow. That's a great question, actually. Mm. Probably The Dark Knight. I'd never heard anything about Batman before. I had no clue about Batman. It's not really shoved in your face, is it, Batman? But yeah, I thought it was really interesting.
So. While you think of a real suggestion, I went to... Oh, I'm sick of saying Kevin Smith, but I went to see Kevin Smith at the O2 in London. Yeah. I missed my last train home. And Paul Dawson, who does the artwork for this podcast, me and him were stuck at the station. Luckily, London doesn't close like most cinemas, and it's open till 3, 4 in the morning. Mm-hmm. I randomly, after I left Paul, went to see Rules of Attraction. Mm. I saw a poster of loads of cuddly toys doing different sex positions. I knew nothing about it, and I was like, hang on, that's Dawson. I swear that's Dawson from Dawson's Creek. I went in, I was blown away, I absolutely loved it. I came home, I went on the internet and bought a Region 1 DVD, because it had been out 3 or 4 months before that. And I showed it. I think we had this question recently where you tell everyone about a film. I was telling everyone about this film. It was never going to be shown at like Odeon or any of these big cinemas. And I absolutely loved that film. And I thought it was so well done.
Such a good film. Yeah. I was introduced to that by a friend of mine who said, you need to see this film. And I first thing I saw was that Dawson was in it. I was like, I don't want to watch a film with James Van Der Beek in. But he's so good in that film.
Did you see it and just go, really?
Yeah. That was my reaction. Like, really? Must we?
And he's phenomenal.
It's a superb film. I can't think of a good film that I've seen by accident, really. But I can think of one that was so bad that it's kind of good. So on Freeview and Sky, these days they have really terrible movie channels, like Movies for Men and stuff like that. And a few months back, it was late at night, it must have been 3 in the morning, and I'm just flicking around the channels, and I get to Movies for Men or one of those. And there was a film on, and I didn't know what it was called, didn't know what it was, but I just got there at the start of the film, and it was starring Denzel Washington. Okay, cool, good start. Co-starring Russell Crowe. I'm like, shit, man, Denzel Washington and Russell Crowe.
I think you've told me about this.
Yeah, it was Virtuosity, one of the single worst films I've ever seen, where Russell Crowe is like a computer program based on a serial killer, the serial killer he was in life. Denzel Washington's in prison, but he's been released from prison to go into virtual reality to hunt down Russell Crowe, and it is an abomination. But it was so bad. As I say, it was like 3 in the morning. I'm pretty sure it was a school night, you know. I was supposed to be asleep, I had work the next day, but it was one of those where I was like, I'll just watch it for 10 minutes, and then after that I was like, I'll watch it until 4, and then before I know it I'd watch the whole goddamn film, and it was atrocious but so awful that I couldn't stop watching.
You have told me about that. It was we'll come back from the football, I think, to the pub one. I think it was that week you'd watched it as well. I think it was like a Wednesday. You're up at like 3 a.m.
Check it out, man. Virtuosity, it is abysmal.
This question was the best film. The best film you've seen.
Yeah, but it was so
I
bad.
I got Rules
good.
Of Attraction, you know.
I think for me, real answer, American History X.
Wow.
It was late one night, about sort of 10, 11-ish. Yeah. And I was just kind of flicking through channels, and it was on ITV2. Mm-hmm. I think I was like, American History. I kind of thought, I've heard of this. I've heard really good things about it. It's about probably 10 years ago now. And I just remember sitting down and just watching it. It was obviously a bit intense to start with. You're like, whoa, what's going on here?
I'd love to think that you thought it was like a sequel to American Pie.
I thought it was a sequel to Malcolm X.
Very different.
Very, very different.
But no, it's probably the best film I've ever actually just stumbled upon and watched.
It's unbelievable. This one is from @AliceMinted. Now, the reason I've put a picture here, which I will put on social media, is because it looks incredible. But her question was, have any of you guys seen Rock and Roll Nightmare?
No.
Haven't. No. The tagline is, when the band start to rock, heads start to roll. And it looks like He-Man with a guitar. Now, usually, when these sort of things happen, I'm like, what the hell? But I'm sold. And Ben's looking at it right now, and I think he's intrigued.
I love the fact that the picture you've given us here is the cover of the DVD, and at the top it says special edition. As if there are multiple editions
of
this.
Was there a normal edition?
Yeah. I'll let Adam have a quick look, because this is something that I think it looks intriguing.
It's like if Dolph Lundgren and David Bowie had a kid.
That's actually the tagline on the back.
You bought it now, haven't you, Mark? You went straight on to
I'm getting the Blu-ray. Yeah. I'm going to wait.
He used to come back. I remember from HMV with some of the weirdest DVD choices ever.
Other stores are available.
They're not
CEX,
though, are they?
Of course.
Yeah. At Samir Alam 94, since it's Tom Cruise's birthday,
Happy birthday, Tom.
I would like to know, what is your favourite film of Tom Cruise? Ooh. It can be from the 80s, the 90s, the noughties, or right now.
Yeah, I mean, it depends whether you mean favourite film or favourite performance, because they're not necessarily the same thing. But yeah. I'm going to go with favourite performance, and it is Magnolia. Mm-hmm. He is unreal in that film. He's like the self-help guru. Respect the cuck. So good.
He's so different to anything he's ever done as well. I was literally like, how did they get him to do this? Because it's when he was going through his kind of Ben Affleck stage of everyone loving him, this Hollywood kind of guy, and he just went and did that.
Mm.
Probably Jerry Maguire. Big fan of that thing. He's really good in that. Fantastic in that. On the subject of Tom Cruise, you guys been watching Preacher?
Yes.
Have you seen all the little nods in the background on the TVs of like Tom Cruise's funeral being held at the Church of Scientology?
Yeah, because doesn't he blow up in the first episode?
The thing that possesses Jesse Custer has obviously possessed him first and killed him. Yeah. I just find it every time. It's just in the background, like Tom Cruise funeral held today.
I'm trying to think, but it'd probably be Vanilla Sky, which isn't the best film, but I just, like you said, I like his performance, and that's what I'm going with.
He is a good actor.
He is.
Oh, yeah, damn right.
Top guy.
Again, as I said, I watched Tropic Thunder this past weekend. Yeah. He's brilliant in that as the movie executive.
It's a bit like DiCaprio syndrome. He got a bit overused at one point, and people sort of got fed up with him.
And all the films were very samey. Yeah. He was getting overused in the same roles.
But he's damn good.
He is, big time.
I watched one of him the other day, actually. I can't remember what it's called. It's a sci-fi, quite recent film. Oblivion? Okay.
Oblivion.
Wank. It was shy.
Isn't that the one that looks exactly the same as a Will Smith film that came out the same? Yeah. They look identical.
They look identical, yeah.
At Cyberman_151. Ugh, God. There's a rumour that the Carry On films are going to be making a comeback, which I would believe right now with all the stuff like Dad's Army and that. I'm intrigued. Can any of you guys say, if you've watched any of the Carry On films, and if you have, which one has been the best?
I, in fact, had them all on VHS. I used to love the Carry On films when I was a kid. Carry On Up the Khyber is brilliant. Carry On Abroad is probably my favourite, but I've seen them all countless times. Not in many years, admittedly, but as a youth, I loved the Carry On films.
Yeah, it was one of those things where, as a kid, you watched them because they made you laugh, but you didn't get any of the jokes.
It was all double entendre, and often single entendre, in fact. They were all, you kind of felt as a kid that the jokes were slightly too rude for you, and that's why you laughed. Yeah. You knew you probably shouldn't.
You shouldn't be laughing.
Yeah, exactly. Laughing. And that's why you laugh more.
But yeah, probably something, Carry On Camping or something.
Carry
like.
On Camping's a classic,
And Carry On Matron. Is full of, that one is full of double entendres. Yeah.
I've never seen one all the way through.
You've never seen a Carry On film? Never. That is crazy.
But I remember seeing a scene where they're like,
it's got to be
bra flies off.
That's Carry On Camping. That's Barbara Windsor.
Her baps are massive.
That's what you get from that.
Cheers. Yeah,
just if you didn't know, they're really big. Sid, I've never watched it.
Sid James's dirty laugh is just amazing. one of the highlights of anyone's childhood.
Yeah.
So what do you think about it coming back? No. Leave it.
It's had its time.
It's an artifact of its era.
It's retrograde now.
They tried to do it. They brought it back for a film called Carry On Columbus in the 90s that had people, instead of the old cast of Sid James and Hattie Jakes and the like, it had people like, I think Rick Mayall might have been in it, and I'm pretty sure Shane Ritchie was in it. This is the colour reveal.
It would make sense if he was.
And it didn't work. It wasn't funny because they tried to maintain the same style of humour, and that humour worked in the 70s, but not so much in the 90s.
And with the cast they had. People like Sid James.
Exactly.
It worked.
And the thing is, now we live in a far smuttier era. Double entendres were the height of dirty humour in the 70s because you couldn't say nasty things. Now, if you watch a Judd Apatow film, for example, you hear all manner of filth that is way beyond entendre. They just wouldn't work anymore.
Yeah.
And you can't really replace Kenneth Williams.
No. He was amazing.
Pod About Nothing. It's a lot of best ofs in this week. Can you let us know the best film, in your opinion, each of The Rock, and then the worst?
The Tooth Fairy. I'm not going to say which.
But have you actually seen The Tooth Fairy?
Yeah.
I was
the one.
It's going to be The Tooth Fairy because I've seen bits of it and it was dreadful. The best film he's ever done.
The best film he's ever done.
I like Fast Five. Is that one where they put the safe to the back of the car and they're driving around and it's attached?
They all blend.
I really enjoyed his performance in that. He was very, very convincing and I just thought he gave it everything.
It's kind of weird because I kind of have the same answer for both. Have you ever seen the film Be Cool? That's a terrible sequel to Get Shorty.
Never.
No.
Arguably one of the worst films ever made. So it's technically his worst film, but he's brilliant in it.
So technically his best film.
Yeah, it was one of the first films where he got to play a guy who wasn't an action hero. He played a gay cowboy. And he's just so funny in it. And I think that was when people looked at him and went, okay, he's a meathead, but we don't just have to use him in meathead roles. He's clearly got comic chops, which anyone who'd watched wrestling in the 90s knew he had comic chops. Yeah. But I think that's when Hollywood realised it. And I love him in that film. He's the only thing watchable in that film.
I'm not going to say which one's best and which one's worst. Mm. The Tooth Fairy, the Scorpion King. So you make up your mind.
Stuart Thomas. After the last episode on Skip Back in Time, it was obvious that Ben and Mark got their favourite films to talk about.
Yep.
I'm curious, Adam, what is your actual favourite film?
I'm not going to say. One of The Tooth Fairy. The Scorpion King. But no, it's obvious what my favourite film of all time is. Come on.
Dark Knight.
Sliding Doors.
Is it Dark Knight, or is that just because you... I know you.
Or is it Scott Pilgrim?
I think The Dark Knight is...
Or is it The Graduate?
The Dark Knight was something that was close to me, because I loved Batman growing up as a kid. So to see that representation of Batman, representation of the Joker on screen was perfect for me. But you'll also remember I actually had it in my most overrated films.
You did, yeah.
Of all time.
Which was a fucking jaw-dropper.
Yeah, because I don't, as much as I love it, I don't think it should be rated as highly as it is within movie circles necessarily. It's impossible to choose my favourite film of all time. Scott Pilgrim is probably the one I get the most enjoyment out of watching.
Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to go on, as we're talking, I'm going on to our website, skip to the end, .co.uk, fabulously designed by me, myself, and I.
It does look really good.
And I'm going to have a look at our lists and see what Adam gave in his most recent top five movies of all time.
It was, I believe, Shaun of the Dead, There Will Be Blood, The Dark Knight, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, and The Graduate.
Shaun of the Dead's not in there. You took out Shaun and put in The Departed.
I put The Departed
in. Yeah. So if pushed, gun to your head, out of There Will Be Blood, Scott Pilgrim, The Departed, Dark Knight, and Graduate, if you had to pick one, which one would you go with?
Scott Pilgrim.
Fair enough.
I'm going to say as well, I don't think The Thing is my favourite film ever made.
Mm.
I'm very passionate about it, but I think the more I think about it, I think it's Jaws.
McAmee.
It's always going to change.
It is.
It's always going to change.
McAmee's up there.
Well, on our 2-year anniversary special in 4 episodes' time, we will revisit our top 5 again. And, I already know of one film that's probably going to sneak in. And then, Christ, Fear and Loathing might sneak in now.
But this is the thing about how it always changes, because those of you who have been listening since day one will realise that, will remember that Ben didn't have Blade Runner.
I didn't.
In his top 5.
I picked 5 films that I loved, and I purposely, because we were new to the podcast at the time, I purposely tried to go with a broad swathe of genre. So I put in Anchorman, which is a film I absolutely adore, but I put it in just because I wanted to shoehorn a comedy in there, and I just picked out Blade Runner at random, because I didn't really think, for one thing, I didn't think anyone was listening. So it didn't really matter what I said. But then when it dawned on me people were listening, and I had taken out Blade Runner, my favourite film of all time, I rectified that.
I had Gremlins the first time we did it round, and then I completely left out Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
Yeah.
Al Robinson. Guys, what do you think about the new Trainspotting 2 title, T2? Surely this is criminal.
Yeah, apparently Danny Boyle went to James Cameron and asked him for permission to call the film T2. And Cameron got the joke and was like, yeah, that's fine. But I think it's a shit name. I can understand why they've not given it the name of the book, which is Porno.
Right.
You can't put that on posters.
No.
So I get why they've changed the name, but T2 is shit.
To be honest, I don't think Trainspotting 2 or T2 sound any good.
No.
They should have just come up with something else.
Yeah.
Still Trainspotting?
Something like that, maybe.
Good, aren't I?
Trainspotting and me.
Felix, this is a bit spooky, as you just discussed it. Not a movie question, but I'm very curious to know your thoughts on the new Preacher series. This is for you too. I've not seen more than a couple. I'm waiting and binging them.
So far, I've seen 5 episodes, and I've enjoyed them all to varying degrees, but mostly enjoyed them. But it's just so slow. It's getting nowhere fast, and it worries me because 5 episodes in, very little's happened, and there's only 10 episodes in the season. I just need them to jump ahead. And it's kind of, Adam, I know you've not read all the comics. You've only read a few select issues, haven't you? I've read all the comics, and the show plays effectively as a prequel because the comics start with basically the church that he's running in the show. The comics start with that church exploding and then him, Tulip and Cassidy going on a road trip. So this, the whole series so far has been like a prequel, which is fine. I like getting that backstory and getting to know those people a bit more, but they just need to speed it up.
In a 10 episode series, you think they should be getting their teeth in now?
Yeah, I mean, more should have happened by now.
By the time this goes out, there will be a sixth episode.
Yeah.
So we don't know.
Yeah.
Whether they'd have actually moved the story on, progressed it a lot by then. I'm going to say probably not.
Yeah.
I'm feeling that, given what you've just said, maybe this series is going to end with the church blowing up.
That's my expectation. And thankfully, last week it was announced that Series 2 has been greenlit. Yeah. There's going to be a second season. Because my worry was, because the ratings in America haven't been particularly great, I think the thing that saved it is because it's on Amazon, not just in the UK but over the world, that because there's international play for it, it's going to survive because of the international viewers. But it's not doing great in America. And I was worried that it was going to get cancelled and we wouldn't get that, because I do think it will end with them going off on the road trip.
Well, I believe they've hyped it essentially as AMC wanted it to be their summer Walking Dead.
Yeah, exactly.
They wanted it to kind of go that way, didn't they? But it, like you say, you can't just turn something overnight into that kind of success, especially something as wacky as Preacher.
And the thing is, it's hard to be another Walking Dead, because The Walking Dead, and I like The Walking Dead, I say this as a fan, but The Walking Dead is the Dan Brown novel of TV shows. Dan Brown's novels are piss poor, they're terribly written, but every chapter ends on a cliffhanger. Loads of shit happens, ends on a cliffhanger, then you have to turn the page to the next one. That's why people buy Dan Brown's books, and that's what Walking Dead does. There'll be a big zombie horde, some shit will happen in the last minute, and then you'll be like, oh God, is Glenn alive? And you have to tune in next week. Preacher isn't doing that. Preacher's playing the long game. They could have made it
a cliffhanger.
They could have made it like that, but I think they're trying to aim for something slightly more artistic, which is great, but will people stick around long enough to see it?
I'm digging it. I am. Mm-hmm. I'm digging it. I think me and you first spoke about it a while back, and we kind of both agreed that they've not pulled any punches on how the comic kind of is. It's a bit crazy, a bit dark. Same as you, the fear was that wouldn't necessarily work or play with the majority of people. Mm-hmm. I'm glad it's got a season two, so we'll see. Yeah. See how it goes.
I've just had a brainwave. I reckon what we do on this podcast now is we're like, so let's score it then, guys. Adam, what's your rating? Find out next week on Skip to the End.
Give our ratings.
I was thinking this would be
after.
Really good. And like, find out.
We are the Dan Brown of podcasts.
That could work.
It'd be awful.
Terrible. I could wait 2 weeks to hear him say 7
every
out of
week.
10.
So this week we're going to be reviewing Central Intelligence. Ben, thoughts? Find out.
That'd be good. Two more questions. Andy Winter, what's your top three performances from a WWE wrestler, one each?
That's a topic.
it kind of is too big. So top three performances in films from WWE wrestlers.
One each.
I will go with Hot Rod, Rowdy Roddy Piper and They Live.
I agree.
You've got to choose something different.
Pick a different one.
Thunderlips.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan in Rocky 3.
That's a good one. Good work.
I know you're sitting there thinking, has Tugboat ever been in a film? And he hasn't, Mark, so I'd give it up.
What about Sweet Tea?
He's not been in a film.
Funkasaurus.
He has been in a film that came out from WWE Studios last year.
That one, then. That's my choice.
Really? Really, that one?
Hulk Hogan was in Suburban...
Commando.
Mm-hmm. That'll be it. And the very last question from Alan Routon. If Skip to the End ended tomorrow, what would be the thing you miss the most?
The laughter.
Yeah, probably just ripping into each other, to be honest.
Yeah.
Let's make it a bit more niche-y. What feature would you miss the most? Sorry, Alan, I've just adding my bit on.
Is that what he asked? No,
no,
you just changed
I'm just changing
thing.
It.
Is it you? Did you send that
Alan
question?
Asked that and I'm adding my bit in.
I would genuinely miss the rewatch because, you know, the crux of this show is that it's about movies and all the topics, all the different features are about movies, but mainly it's about reviewing movies. And invariably, I enjoy talking about the rewatches more than I do the modern day films because we get to pick the rewatch.
Yeah. Yeah.
We get to pick a great film or a terrible film that's fun to talk about. I love the rewatch.
We can't have a situation where Blade Runner gets released in cinema and we go and review it. We have to choose that.
Exactly. And I like that. And it's good fun.
I like to skip back because I just, it's challenging.
Now it's 80s, you love
it. Yeah, and it's challenging. I like the fact that we're there going, oh shit, this is a crap year, and you've got to justify why. Yeah.
And for, you know, for the future listeners, it's the last one next week, next episode, the very last Skip Back in Time. There will be a brand new feature coming on episode 51.
So I didn't realise we're going to tell the people that today.
Oh man, I'm juicing them up, leaving them dangling, I told you.
I think
I'm Dan Brown. I'm Dan Browning them.
Yeah. Find out what the new feature is on episode 51.
I think one of the things that I'm going to miss, it's only quite recently, but...
Hang on, you're going to miss?
Yeah.
You're talking like it is your last episode.
I just assumed when the 80s went, we're all, that was it, we're done. One of the things that I think I would miss is the game shows.
Yeah.
I think, like, I don't mean to, like, toot our own horn or anything, but some of the game shows we've all come up with have been absolutely just hilarious.
They're so just daft.
And we've got that right amount of lack of research and pressure when we're getting asked the questions to come out with some of the most ridiculous answers ever.
Yeah.
And it's just, it just makes for good
listening. Challenging,
and
though.
And with the quizzes, what I would say is thank Christ for editing. Because the amount of shit we cut out. Dear listener, if you think what you hear is shit, just imagine what we cut out.
One day, not yet, by the time we get to about episode 100,
yeah.
I will put out there like a best of the unheard edit, and that's when we get shut down.
Most of the shit we cut out is libelous.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, though, because do you remember, we used to get asked, would you ever do a live show?
Yeah.
No. Never in a million years.
Couldn't do it.
We'd be sued so quickly. Yeah.
I'm still in shock you've told them that we're ending Skip Back.
Yeah.
I'm ready for the tweets now.
Mm. What?
Mm-hmm. So enjoy the last one.
But we've ended segments before and we've always come out stronger.
Indeed. And now the people know, I want them to get involved. Get onto the Skip to the End Twitter, get onto the Instagram, get onto the website, the Facebook, and tell us what is the best film of 1980. Get involved. It's the last chance.
Wow. Keep your questions coming. The best way to go, like Ben just said, is skiptotheend.co.uk. A beautiful website, constructed well. Very user-friendly.
Right.
These sites I go on are very annoying to use. But
I'm not reading a review of the website.
And we'll
we don't make any money by plugging our own website.
There's some advertisements on there. Make sure you use our link to buy stuff off Amazon. I hate that.
Oh, awful.
We'll never do that. No, we'll never do that.
Listeners, we won't do that to you,
and let's
promise.
Be honest, it would just be a link to H.B. Ballmer's website for Strongbow Dark Fruit.
But yeah, keep the questions coming and we'll answer them on episode 50 in 2 weeks' time.
And that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast, episode 49.
49.
We are so close.
It worries me that most of our episodes are about an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Yeah.
So there's probably about 100 hours of us, including the specials we've done and the Comic-Con episodes. There's probably 100 hours. You could sit there for 4 days.
I forgot we don't even class them, do we?
I know.
Specials.
Yeah, I think including the specials, we're up to something like 58 episodes.
That's insane.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
It's exhausting.
It's almost 2 years now, boys.
Like, do you know, I think it was when prisoners were in Guantanamo Bay and they used to try and break them so they would, you know...
They could just use arse.
Yeah, because what they used to do is they'd play Metallica, which I find offensive, the fact that they'd play heavy metal at these terrorists and that was supposed to make them break. Now they could just play 100 hours of our gibberish and they'd break within minutes.
100 hours of Mark mispronouncing names.
100 hours.
Yeah.
And that's the stuff we've cut as well.
Yeah.
Just got prisoners coming out of Guantanamo Bay saying, how many times did he see The Dark Knight?
I was wondering where you're going with that when you start, there's prisoners, right?
I've flown on suicide missions and even I didn't shit myself. When I'm watching E.T.
Next episode is the big one. It's the big 5-0.
Yeah.
Huge. I don't need to sell it, really.
Big, huge, massive. And what are we going to be talking about? Well, first of all, we're going to be reviewing Ghostbusters. Indeed. Which we're cautious. Cautiously optimistic, maybe?
No, just cautious.
Just cautious.
I'm looking forward to it now because it's never going to be
changed.
Bad. I know, because I just give it a chance. You know what I mean? I'm just going to give it a chance.
You don't want to prejudge it, though, do you?
No. I don't. I'm going to give it a chance. I'm going there with... I'm going to be all right. You'll be all right.
The thing is, certain elements that are in place for it are correct.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. We have to...
The one thing I'm gonna let a little bit of rage out now. I didn't realise until the latest trailer that Stay Puft was in it. I thought they weren't there. There's like a guy with like a Mr. Whippy head.
Mm.
And I thought, okay, they've gone for a different take. And then I saw a real big CGI, over-the-top, glow-up
Stay Puft.
And I was fuming. I was like, you're pissing me off now.
So you're
like,
not... You know.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Changed his mind again.
I'm looking forward to it.
He's turning like Big Show again.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and we'll be honest as always, so tune in for that.
Yeah, if there's one thing you get from us, it's honesty.
That's true.
As well as that, we're going to be rewatching what?
Shaun of the Dead.
Indeed. About bloody time, isn't it?
Adam's going to be literally spaffing for 10 minutes.
I took it out my top five, as we discussed earlier, so maybe it'll make its way back in.
Could do. Knocking on the door to five. Final year of Skip Backing Time, 1980.
It's a big one.
I think we might all shed a tear over that, say wave goodbye to one of our favourite features. But we're not going to leave you in the lurch. We will have a brand new feature here that we announce again on the next episode.
Stay tuned.
Leaving them dangling, giving them the old Dan Brown act. So look forward to that. We will tell you what's coming. And I'm going to put my money on it now. It's as good as, if not better than, Skip Back in Time.
We always come back stronger.
Damn straight. We're going to have a one-off quiz where we're going to quiz one another. We're going to come with five questions each about ourselves, about things that we have said on this podcast. So it's a quiz to the other members to see if they actually remember anything we've said and how well we know one another, which I think will be a little bit of fun for the listeners, should especially our long-time listeners who've listened to all 50 episodes.
What about quiz to the end?
Quiz to the end works.
I like that.
Yeah?
Quiz to the end, that's all right. We've got us on the spot.
That's fine, that's fine. No, we planned that.
We've had that.
That's,
yeah.
Yeah, like
yeah.
Yeah.
That's still cool with that one then, yeah?
That's what I've got written here, honestly.
Yeah, that's what we said earlier.
Quiz to the end. Well done, Mark.
That is what we said 3 weeks ago when we came up with this idea.
It is. And what's our topic, Adam?
We're going to be looking at your top three vehicles, transportation in film. So spaceships, cars, whatever.
Yeah.
If it's an iconic thing and you love it, it's yours.
Lovely.
And I'm going to give something away. I'm not going to reveal. Stay tuned for the prize.
I haven't got one yet. No, definitely have. Yeah. Definitely have.
And there'll just be a lot more of this. Just a lot of this guff.
A few more of these.
Just guff.
I can't wait. Guff!
Just wall-to-wall guff. See you in 2 weeks.